Polestar, accelerating the change to a fully electric, climate-neutral future. Dear audience, my name is Ludmila Dehr. I'm the Managing Director of Elite Experts Conferences, and I would like to welcome you to the next episode of the Elite Experts Conferences podcast. Whether at live events or in the digital world, we bring together cool, promising tech startups with exciting, innovative global players and generate a platform where the world of sustainable technology meets. Get to know the different companies, but also the inspiring leader personalities behind these brand names. Our motto is towards a better and cleaner future through knowledge transfer and technology. We have today a very special episode because for the first time, a guest that was participating in one of our premium panels is invited right away for the next episode in a one-on-one interview. Let me welcome here Jörg Brandscheid as CTO at Polestar. Since our podcast episodes are also listened to independently, of course, I don't want to deprive our audience of a short introduction of Jörg's background. So Jörg, you worked for over 19 years at General Motors, starting as a project engineer and finishing in the role as head of GM Powertrain Electronic Development. Afterwards, you moved on to the role as head of electronics development at Glass in agriculture machinery. In 2014, you joined Chery Automobile in China, where you had the role as executive director engineering. Later in 2017, you started as VP Engineering Powertrain Drivetrain Electronics at Continental. After 2 years, you moved on to HELLA as EVP Electronics and became a member of the executive board. In October 2021, you joined Polestar. And here we are, almost 2 years later. Our most recent premium panel, where you, Jörg, participated, had the title Innovation Scouting and Strategic Partnerships in Automotive Industry. Well, today we will of course also address the topic of innovations and collaborations, but we will also try to cover quite a few other exciting contemporary topics in the automotive industry. So let's start. Okay, Jörg. We have a bit of history with Polestar in our podcast because in our fourth episode, we had already Thomas Ingenlaar, CEO at Polestar, as our guest. It was summer 2020 and we talked about Polestar 1, which still had a hybrid powertrain. And we talked about Polestar 2, which was then fully electric. And of course, we talked also about Polestar Precept. And at that time, and we all remember summer 2020, that was pandemic. And because of the pandemic, this concept car was just digitally presented. And it was just a few months before we had that interview. And at that time, that was it. Meanwhile, we have Polestar 3 and we have Polestar 4 that are already in the media, especially since Polestar 4 had its premiere at the Shanghai Auto Show just a few weeks ago. And Jörg, could you please take us through the development of the product portfolio at Polestar, and how does this journey continue when we look at the performance and electrification only, first of all?
Yeah, sure. Let's start again. Polestar 1, that was the opening, 2017, with an exciting design, a sports car, particularly focused on power, on unique design. That was a kind of opener for brand awareness. And that was quite a successful, was really an eye catcher and to establish the new brand of Polestar. Polestar 2, a successful story, launched in 2021. Now in the meantime, we have over 100,000 sales, a pure EV. And that was then the starting point for the Polestar revision, let me say, new definition of the brand and 100% focus on EVs. Then Polestar 3, now launched in Copenhagen in October, the second EV car, now an SUV, with particular focus on design once again. It's an SUV with a little bit lower, but with a wider stance and also with an incredible roominess. You do not see that when you are standing in front of the car, but when you are sitting inside, the whole interior design is tailored for that. It's a quite exciting user experience. And first time with a centralized EE architecture. That means we are prepared for the upcoming generations of autonomous driving, and also with a kind of sensor availability, for example, with LiDAR. Polestar 4, as you said, now just launched in Shanghai, was an incredible launch. I was personally there with standing ovations with the car. Then also, once again, with a very nice design, but also with new technical features, also from the interior, once again, some safety features has been in. Then mainly focusing on range in this time, range extension. So we're achieving more than 650 kilometer range with one battery cycle, and power, once again, to underline the driving performance. And outlook, that is, was also already in the press, nothing new about Polestar 5. Now really physical available with prototypes. People can drive it even. Our management drove it and they are very excited about it. It's a car based on kind of new platform, aluminum bounded structure, also focusing on an agile driving behavior, sportive driving behavior, incredible power, 900 horsepower in this case. And we expect this car in customer hand by end of next year. And last but not least, Polestar 6, that is our roadster, also based on the precept concept, also aluminum bonded, very nice design. What we can say, we made an introduction of concept cars in Bumble Beach last year. Within 1 week, we got 500 orders. And you see the kind of success of this car then as well. The customer feedback is quite good.
So actually, it's really an impressive journey, as you already said. It's really incredible to see how it develops. And actually, starting very much as a sports car, no? So with a lot of focus on design, and that continues, that definitely continues, and also focused on performance and sustainability and so on and so on. But also this sporty driving element that will always stay in the Polestar brand. Is that correct? Do I see that correctly?
Absolutely. So we have three elements, three main DNA elements in Polestar, and that is design, that is sustainability. So we have our Project Zero, and maybe we can talk about this a little bit later. And it is performance, and that is particular dynamic driving behavior. It's not more the 0 to 100 performance. It is really the user experience when you drive the car actively by hand.
Mm-hmm. And when you are talking about Polestar 6, so what is the timeline for that car then?
It's scheduled for 2025, in that range, mid of 2025 currently. For this, we got also the orders.
And any kind of smaller cars are not planned so far. And as we can look in the future, it's also not planned in the future so far, no?
Definitely, we have our cycle plan. And there is more coming. There can be even some variants out of existing platforms what we're having. These are not launched so far. Therefore, I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Okay, that's correct. We have to accept it. That's true. Then let's look again at the product portfolio, but with a slightly different focus. Let's focus now on the technical features, be it some kind of autonomous driving abilities or passive security or infotainment or connectivity. How was the evolution process there? So can you give a little bit more details on that?
Yeah, and I already indicated Polestar 3, first car with a centralized EE architecture. EE stands for electrical architecture, and that enables us to separate hardware from software and to have a kind of base software available where we can evolve and can reuse for future platforms as well. So the ability to enhance software features is much easier and to reuse that once again. And the centralized architecture also enables a kind of redundant system, electrical system, what is required for some autonomous driving features. So that's the first version in Polestar 3. And also connected with the LiDAR system, what you also need to generate redundant sensing, which is required then also to enable more than L2 plus capability for autonomous driving.
And now let's look for the third time at the development of Polestar's product portfolio. But this time we have sustainability in the main focus. So how was the past there? And do you also have some examples or maybe also some relevant numbers that you could share there?
Yeah, and let's stick on our current program. What is in the market? Polestar 2. It's now almost 2 years. We started with a CO2 consumption value of roughly 27 tons CO2 per car, and it's down now to 23. That is what we achieved during more or less 1 year. And there will be another two-digit number for actually 2023. That is now that the next communication what we are currently preparing. So we are preparing even our current programs to be more efficient on CO2 consumptions. And that is our target, let me say. That is the first car. And this roadmap will be now continue it with our upcoming releases. We are particular focusing now also to introduce alternative materials, particular for interior, exterior, but also critical elements like the battery. There's a particular focus on. For this, we have a special project, and now we even adapted the organization that that we bring this really in a kind of operational execution and to make constant progress on our CO2 footprint.
That's very good that you mention particularly the battery technology, because I would like to go a bit more in depth on that. Because, you know, electric vehicles are sometimes promoted as planet saver, no? So, but we all know that there's still a lot of talk about the problems associated with battery technologies and so on. So what is Polestar's position on this? And what are you doing to improve battery efficiency, lithium extractions, and battery life and disposal, etc., etc.?
Yeah, we as Polestar, we do not support the race of maximum range by just increasing the power of the battery or the size of the battery. That is the wrong way. What we are believing is also supporting then our sustainable approach is downsizing. Yes, we of course focusing also on energy density and working in our research activities on different matters and with different partners to achieve that. But we are opening the question is 1,000 kilometer for one battery range, is that really the target? Should we rather focus on charging performance, execute the charging process quicker? And that is actually another focus point currently where we try to win with some partners. Here we are currently cooperating quite successfully with some demonstrators with StoreDot. It's also not a secret. It's communicated. The interim results looking quite promising. And the overall achievement then is, or our goal is basically then to downsize, save material, and to reduce material, and make it simply more efficient, make the car lighter, and then these are the overall goals.
Those are actually very, very good goals. And also like, okay, not going for maximal range enhancement and downsizing and collaborations, especially when you mentioned StoreDot. I mean, to give to our audience a bit more of background details there. StoreDots, they stand technologically for super fast charging. So do you have some numbers that you are allowed to share, let's say, what you achieved so far? I know that they communicated also themselves, let's say, a lot of lab results and so on, so what is possible. So I heard something about like 5 minutes and then you have like, I do not remember the number again, 80 or 90% of charges and so on. So could you give some numbers if you are allowed to, let's say, those are already public?
That is the officially communicated number, the charging process between 10 and 90%. Achieved that exactly in 5 minutes, a range of 100 miles. And that is the current status, but we are really shooting for 10 to 90% charging in 10 minutes. And then we, of course, need to tailor the battery accordingly. These are currently our interim's goals for the first research, for the first step. And then there is more potential. Let's see, there will happening a lot of activities around the battery in the next coming years.
I'm really crossing the fingers for Polestar and StoreDot collaboration because it sounds so exciting. But I mean, we all know now lab results, etc., are a little bit different than the reality looks like. But still, I hope that it will work out. But I want to address that in our community so that if somebody in the audience has something, some technologies that can help with that, so that people go and reach out or go directly to you or reach out to us so that we make a connection and so on, so that some collaboration can arise on exactly those topics that are most important currently. No? So
I would definitely support that. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it has a certain value why we do this and why we emphasize always collaboration and this kind of spirit of working together on something. And what is Polestar's strategy when it comes to battery recycling? I mean, we always look at the production side, but we have also to look what happens actually afterwards, no? So
recycling is a very important factor, and all battery suppliers are working on that to get the ingredients back, and rather than to always focus on mining. But that is also the challenge. Currently, the resources for recycling are not there because the aging process are not really so long ago. No, EVs are, the numbers of EVs are not so high. Currently, the suppliers actually asking how to get it back and asking the OEMs, please help us make some contracts accordingly that the backflow of the batteries is in a controlled manner, to really recycle them in a structural way. That is an issue what we might solve with processes, but we are definitely supporting that. Recycling is one important element rather than to mining again.
Do you have also some collaborations there that are public?
Not official, but it's our partners what we are definitely working with. And here in Sweden, you know that we have close connection with Northvolt, for example, where we try to establish those kind of processes needed to get it on in a structural matter back.
Yes, it's definitely beneficial for both sides so that they get also the feedback and also the materials and so on and so on. And actually, we go exactly now in this topic of collaborations. And you mentioned Volvo and, I mean, Polestar, we have also to mention Geely. So for the topic of propulsion, if we concentrate on the topic of propulsion, could you please outline the collaboration between Geely, Volvo and Polestar? And who is in charge technically in terms of solution delivery and not just by definition on paper?
Yeah, definitely. And we all belong to one family. And the family, of course, wants to be efficient, no? And to prevent redundant work. And on high level, there are strategic discussion who's doing what and what the different brands are needed. And particular for the propulsion system, we as Polestar stand for performance and sustainable. And we try to place those topics and to occupy those topics for the company. For example, the EDU, the electrical drive unit, the e-motor. We as Polestar are shooting for a kind of bigger variant supporting this performance thinking. But you want to do this for the group. We occupy this area of development and develop this then potentially for other interested parties as well to guarantee the volume. You know, we don't want to do this only for Polestar. Maybe as a technical start to get the technology industrialized and to launch it in the car. But then we are open to share with other partners as well, like Lotus or Zeekr. And similar with the battery. Currently, we are particular pushing sustainability, alternative materials, and also peak performance. And here we are focusing then our research activities to generate together with the supplier then the needed battery cell for our cars. And this will be then also deployed and multiplied then in the Geely world.
Very, very smart strategy. And especially, I mean, as a smaller player, it's always good to have bigger partners on your side and to collaborate on that. And what I also like very much about the Polestar brand, so how transparently you are about this power of collaboration. You are calling on the whole industry to collaborate, to become carbon neutral. And I think, at least I expect, that there might be some limits on this as well. So I put it in another way. So can one or should one collaborate with competitors? And if so, what should be taken into account? I mean, where does it start? Where does it end?
Definitely. And it is, you can imagine develop a new technology to develop and run the industrialization. There is a huge investment behind. And you said this already, we are not the biggest brand, not yet. We have some ambitions, to grow, of course, but not yet. And therefore, we are always looking for kind of partnerships, but also with regard to partnerships with third parties, no? With even with competitors. No? We got requests from some sport brands in UK, whatever. Maybe they see some for some collaboration. It's just a matter how we set the contracts and who is the IP owner, who pays a license fee for whatever. There, from business point of view, there are no limits, let me say, with regard to collaboration. We always find a way if there is some outlook for a win-win situation.
Can that be sometimes a challenge when you're thinking, let's say, about the IPOs, et cetera, et cetera? So all these decisions, who is actually paying the fees and so on. Is that a little bit of a challenge?
You need to really assess what you want to what do you want to share. But mostly when we are talking about the aluminum bonded strategy, that is one platform which made a lot of effort to develop that. But it is basically a known technology. But if that vehicle platform matching another customer, another OEM, or even a competitor's match, and we find a commercial agreement that they use the base technology, we are open to share. But we make a case-by-case assessment, of course. Another example is our Project Zero with sustainability, where we are currently generating a lot of IP, new ideas to using alternative materials. And as you said, you are definitely proactively inviting external partners to use it as well. It doesn't make sense that only Polestar reach the CO2 neutral status. We want to have the industry behind it. And therefore, we are actively open that.
And I guess also there, your very transparent approach is actually working well, so that the people also give you the transparency back as well.
Yeah.
And now, I know that you are not allowed to name anything specific, and I will absolutely respect that in every way. So therefore, I'm asking in a very, very diplomatic way. So you're working on something that has the potential to disrupt the industry. I use even the word disrupt, even I don't like it because it's overused. So will it be then the Polestar in-house only development, or would you still try to bring partners in there as well?
It depends once again. With regard to sustainability, we just discussed it. Yes, we want to share because we have one mission, let me say, what we want to share with partners, with suppliers, with competitors as well. You would share. When it comes to, for example, a really disruptive idea regarding charging performance, that is a question mark. Yeah, how open that might be, because that would give us a USP for Polestar. And if we want to share this, here we need to think twice, let me say. So it's definitely case by case. When we are talking about process optimization to generally generate a higher gross margin of our product, how to develop things and how to link this into production, that is also Polestar know-how and IP, I would say, what we want not to share, because that brings us a certain advantage with regard to cost, and that would be not very smart to share this then with other OEMs as well.
Actually, now I have a huge advantage, and actually also Steve, who is joining this, let's say, behind the scenes, because we see you, you know, and when you say like, we would have an USP or we will have a benefit, etc., you smiled, you know, so there's something in the background. I'm not going to ask anything. I just hope you have something that will bring the industry forward and that will give you an USP for Polestar. So fingers crossed. So actually, let's continue to talk about the collaboration. Actually, we have another big topic in the automotive industry that should be mentioned in the same breath as collaboration, because no one will be able to handle it alone, and it is autonomous driving. So autonomous driving has certainly followed the infamous hype cycle of emerging technologies. Will it really make it past the low point of disillusionment? And if so, what innovations or what partnerships, but also maybe what kind of regulatory framework are needed to make it reality now?
Yeah, we as Polestar, we have a clear position on that. As already indicated, we stand for fun to drive. Yeah, and to have a complete autonomous driving car like a robo-taxi doesn't make sense for Polestar. So we want to invite the customers to drive actively, but not everywhere. So, and that is also maybe also the staggered introduction. Currently, what I definitely see is we need to offer functions on the highway. No? That supports the drivers. You just turn it on and then lay back, you can drive. That is a kind of L4 preparation where we are also on. I already indicated the required EE architecture. For that, which is already in Polestar 3, or what will be launched now very, very soon to the customer, that will be supported. So the technology backbone is there. Where we still need to cooperate is with the legislations. There is also a kind of staggered introduction plan, for example, in UK, California. You have then first a certain a speed where you allow this, and then over the year it will be expanded, and similar in other countries as well. And we are following these legal requirements with our technology in the car. And that is also actually what you can easily then update with software, in this case, with over-the-air flash, enabling then certain functionalities, and gives you then, if the hardware is available in the car, then the capability to drive your car or let your car be driven autonomously.
Actually, when you mentioned the hardware in the car, and I know your CV, I know your background, so that you were very much responsible for electronics, so power electronics and so on and so on. So basically, will the hardware be able to keep pace with the development of the software? What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, it's not a question. I see that definitely. They must keep pace. But the evolution, particular on the microchips, it's quite outstanding. What you will see is you have usually a lifetime of a car of roughly eight years, then 7 or 8 years, then a successor will be introduced of a model. And in this 7 or 8 years, it is very likely that you see another generation of microprocessor. But that is always then the question, which additional features are required or do you want to introduce? And in most cases, you can even stay with this microprocessor over lifetime. But in certain conditions, particular now in this quite moving, quite fast moving topic with connectivity or levels of autonomous driving, that might be required to update hardware as well, at least once in a car. In a car life cycle.
Yeah, that's good to know. I mean, it sounds also quite realistic, you know, because that can be also outdated quite fast if development of the chips, let's say, is advancing so fast. No? So, and now we continue with the topic of innovation. So I would like to know, how risk averse are you when it comes to innovations? Are they really sometimes some innovations that are too innovative? Or are some of the resources invested in very risky and bold projects on purpose?
Currently, since we are a startup and our budget is also, let me say, limited, we try to be very focused on that where we spend our budget for research activities. And currently, because that is where we need to deliver, is on all kinds of materials regarding sustainability, regarding our Project Zero. That is one focus point. And we want to make this really happen then fine. If in case we have a kind of a partnership with somebody, we selected them very carefully, we try to get really the experts on a particular topic, and also with a kind of self-motivation that they bring a topic forward actively together with us. Therefore, we try to be very specific and selective on our topics where we made effort with regard to research. That is on materials and also on, as I said, on charging. Another element where we currently making effort to reach our goals to reduce battery size again and to improve charging performance and to have this then basically deployed.
And then it can be even a big benefit for you. So let's say that you have to stay focused and you will stay focused and you have first to make the solutions effective and efficient and practical also in the production. No? Yeah. And then you can, let's say, go and explore further projects. How do you make this kind of decision? So how do you decide when you do something no one else is doing? So how do you justify or how do you measure the needs? So via big data, so customer feedback, or just going for it? Also, how do you measure its success afterwards? So some models are revenue driven while others are just features, let's call it like this. So that add a value or incentive for someone to buy vehicles, but most OEMs don't have a strong understanding. So was it really a decision maker? So do you see that differently and how do you approach that there?
Yeah, it is. It's a kind of process, definitely. And our general mission is to stay focused on your research activities. Do not invest everywhere. And you need to understand your DNA and where you as a brand wants to be accepted and wants to be known. And these DNA, these focus points, what I said at the beginning, is this design, is performance. These topics will be then used then also for decision making of research activities to guarantee success, basically. Of course, we want to bring it into production. And it is these research activities always end with a kind of proof of concept. You have an idea, you have a partner, you have then maybe internal resources, you plan the activities and you plan your interim goal with a proof of concept. And when this is successful, you go into a more expensive phase of industrialization and talk with your vehicle chief engineers when this might be then available really for the car and for the market. And success factors, of course, that is a typical R&D measure, how to measure efficiency of your organization. That is time to market, for example. That is really from an idea to customer availability and to have this as fast as possible. That is one KPI for R&D, for example. And with regard to business case calculation, of course, you need to interact with your sales organization, with your marketing organization. If you do not have only a fancy idea generated by some engineers, but cannot never be sold, these interactions need to happen then also with the sales organization that you can really make customer experience, which is accepted finally.
And when you get customer feedback, do you also make that sometimes into follow-up projects on that? Does it happen as well? So that some kind of customer feedback went into new projects because there were some wishes to improve and
definitely for example a climate functions for dogs in the car when you stand your car, or that this is noticed and that the climate will directly adjust to a certain temperature even if you left the car. Those features are always on the table, and we have an active communication with our customer through them boards, and we are quite active to check this regularly and try to improve.
I mean, we already mentioned several times, and you mentioned that I mentioned that you are a relatively small player. You want to stay in that startup size for now. Even you mentioned you have some ambitions on that in the future, but they are definitely larger OEMs and they have more money for innovations. You mentioned already that by focusing, you would try, let's say, to compete with that. But what else do you do, let's say, to compete for differentiation in this environment of innovations?
Yeah, I do not need to repeat that again to be focused. Of course, that is, but that is really an opportunity where you can also narrow your budget or can work with your available budget on resources, focus on the DNA, on your DNA, and in particular working on that. But we are also cooperating with governments even, and currently focusing on sustainability. It's the right time to talk about it. And we always try to achieve that win-win situation. We currently working on a project, bringing a lot of partners in. Governments currently are interested to deploy these measures in their countries as well. And there might be even external funding opportunities, what we try to incorporate then in our activities as well, to increasing our execution power on research activities as well.
By the way, it might be different in Sweden, but when I think about governments, okay, and you have your startup speed, even when we compare, let's say, corporate speed and startup speed, you're much faster. And when we then compare, let's say, bring in the governments, I would say they're even slower than the corporate speed. So do you have that different experience in Sweden?
Definitely. It's not only Sweden. We are in discussion with many governments, let me say, and it's actually not so slow. If the mission is understood, the decision-making might be also quite quick.
Okay, that sounds promising. You mentioned already that all the departments have to communicate with each other, and it's not enough if, let's say, the R&D has the technical solution for something, but you cannot market that and no one can sell it. No? So, and now we have the transition from innovation to production, which might be tricky, with typically two big obstacles. No? Marketing meaning, for example, will this drive sales? And the second obstacle is robustness. So how do you navigate that tricky transition from innovation to production?
Yeah. You need to sell your feature, and the customer is our internal customer is marketing and sales, as already indicated. And this collaboration needs to happen upfront, and that is supported by our process. We do not want to make R&D internally. We do not want to make an own decision about a feature. We always are looking for the dialogue and looking for an hand, open hand, who use that function finally. And this dialogue is incorporated in our process, decision-making process, with a kind of business case calculation. Is it worth to develop this feature? What can we do with that? That will be done with the named partners. And to guarantee the quality, I indicate this as well, we have a kind of advanced engineering process. It's also nothing super new. We ended with a proof of concept. And with this proof of concept, we should have at least an indication, yes, this idea can be realized, and that is the idea for industrialization. And with this, we go then into the vehicle programs. So that is a kind of quality assurance process to really have it then available for the market.
Let me understand the internal processes. So, for example, if somebody in the R&D department, let's say on the engineering level, would have some ideas, maybe already some tests, etc., so that look promising, they need first to sell the idea to you, and then you go and sell that idea to, then when I understand it correctly, to marketing, let's say. No? So is that correct?
Yeah, we do that together. Yeah, but even a little bit earlier, when we have the idea itself, we want to discuss with marketing how we can place that idea in our product portfolio before we start the research activities. Yeah, so that is really happening quite early before we start, before we invest anything. And when there's an acceptance about an idea, then we go into this proof of concept phase. With this, we have a double check with the vehicle side again, which vehicle might be then finally using that, and plan the industrialization and the real development of the feature.
I guess what's also helping there, because I remember from the most recent panel that we did, you said also you are a fan of decentralized power, let's say, in the company. So then it's also easier to collaborate, to communicate internally. I guess it's also a huge benefit on that, no?
Yes.
So let's talk a bit more about the software side. So the over-the-air updates prevent both an enabler and cautionary tale for safety and reliability. One can always say, okay, well, we can always fix the innovations later, right? So how does Polestar view that? So how do you plan to get the right mix there?
Yeah, we are, I think it's, we need to have our competitors, and we have our competitor cars. What will not work is if we are launching a car with significant less content and features in the market with our competitors. So we need to have the right level of user excitement to be able to launch the car. Therefore, we need to have a certain status quo of available feature during the launch. And then you need to prepare your organization and your architecture to evolve on that, to introduce additional features. And for this, you usually have a roadmap over the next 3 years, which features might come when. We call it cycle plan. Enable to have a faster introduction. When it comes from third-party features, when we're talking about software, for example, software apps, app introduction into the car, which is already available. There are hundreds of organizations working on apps for cars currently. And there's a really intensive dialogue, what might be fitting into a car and what might be a nice user experience. And this is a good development, actually. But the prerequisite to have a fast introduction is also that you have an release organization, a software organization who can support that and still can quality proof and enable a fast introduction in the car. And that is currently where we are also working on, basically on a kind of software organization. We just started now with a new software head in our organization, and also reorganize, shift a little bit to establish a pure software organization enabling fast introduction of features.
Actually, you also mentioned all the apps or all the companies that are working on the apps for automotive part. And does it mean also that you get a lot of pitches per, I don't know, week or months, let's say, so that a lot of people trying to sell you ideas and how it should look like in your next Polestar?
Definitely.
Is that true?
Definitely, yeah. But fortunately, in the meantime, we have a certain magnitude of our organization that I'm not only the one who need to assess the ideas, though we have a kind of inlet panel for ideas where we can then quickly decide, okay, that's worth to have another discussion about it. And that might be matching with our general Polestar product.
But in general, let's say when we're talking just about software, just about apps, what it needs to be there so that it catches your attention and say like, wow, it has potential. What is it?
It's always, is it something new? Yeah. Is it something what matches to Polestar? And yeah, basically it's the idea itself, the pitch itself, yeah, how it is presented then, and the assessment about potential success and acceptance by the customer.
And actually, when you mentioned like it needs to match, so just my little advice for all the people that are presenting, so like the design of the app must be like high level design. I mean, otherwise, yes. I mean, look just at your website. I mean, it's pure. It's amazing. I mean, it really matches how the car are presented and how everything is done. And I mean, even how the people are presented on LinkedIn, even the profile pictures, you know, like all is kind of conformed and pure. And I mean, people notice that, you know, the outside world, let's say, or I pay attention to these kind of things. And I guess a lot of people pay attention to this kind of thing. So it must be matching.
Yeah, that's true.
And now we come to the last part of our panel. So Jörg, you already know that we always have this tradition in this podcast from the recent panel, because you already answered a couple of questions that were more related to life wisdom. Today, we have a few more questions about leadership, about productivity, and about motivation. So, and we start with motivation. So, being CTO of an innovative and, as we said, ambitious OEM is a job that demands far more than 100% of your time, of your energy, of your resources. Jörg, what motivates you personally to get up in the morning and keep going full steam ahead?
Yeah, that is really automated, let me say. That is the speed of Polestar currently. And that keeps me running as well. I try always to be an important element in the speed making. Yeah. And therefore, I also want to be first in the office. Therefore, that is already a big motivator. That is the speed of Polestar and the opportunity to influence with the role. And everybody has really opportunity to bring ideas in, to be present and to speak up. And this culture is already motivating, let me say. And that is also underlined with surveys in Sweden with regard to attractiveness of employers. And we are really quite high level. And I can underline that it is really happening. That is a motivation factor. And the team itself is definitely motivated, and they're looking for somebody who's really showcased that motivation as well. That is another motivation by myself to really drive activities actively and work with the team together.
And actually, you know, I always say like, okay, one can fake actually a lot of things, but energy cannot be faked. No, that has to be there. Otherwise, people feel that something is off, actually. But it's actually a lot of pressure. I mean, does it also fit your nature? So are you a morning person? So to be there the first one in the office, does it fit?
Yeah, it matches pretty well, actually, definitely. Yeah, so my time is usually 5 o'clock around, 5:30, and then I have a tea, not in a kind of panic mode, directly in the morning. Yeah, have your time in the morning, settle, and then go to your tasks.
Yeah, exactly. Panic mode is anyway not good. I mean, maybe for a short time, like working with adrenaline might be okay, but cannot be like at the standard level. So Jörg, and look it also at your CV. I mean, you seems to be a very productive person. Let's call it like this. So what are your tips and tricks for being highly productive? And more specifically, what do you do when you have maybe also a bad performance day? I just guess that everyone has sometimes, maybe like it's human nature to have a bad performance day.
Yeah.
Maybe not surprise me.
Sure. And that would be not human if you don't have that. But first, to the first part of the question, and I think it's quite essential that you understand that you are not alone, and you can realize everything by yourself. You need your team, One thing is also to share that experience in development and bring motivation in your team. And how can you do that? It is basically to tell the story, what you want to achieve, and empower people. Empowerment is also implicitly also motivation. Give responsibility to your whole organization. And that is basically to establish this frame, and to also maybe distribute responsibility, that if you have a bad day, that this will be compensated by your team, partially. And that is my philosophy a little bit. And if you have really a bad day, what will happen? Definitely, I'm an open person for constant learning. Yeah, and take that again, take it positively, the mess what you produced maybe, and learn out of this and adapt and do it next time better. Yeah, this learning, thinking, and deployment in your own working style. I think that is what I try to live day by day.
That needs a lot of self-awareness to step back, to see their own work, to assess that, to have the key learnings, and then keep on improving the next day. A lot of self-awareness. So, and when you look back at the beginning of your journey as a leader, so what was your leadership style like? And at the very beginning, when you just start to have people, let's say, in team, and how has it evolved?
Yeah, what was when you start from a team leader and then you grow up into other roles, you usually start with a focus on your role on R&D, for example, on one particular topic. And what you are missing is then the business scope at all. Can this idea be efficiently sold afterwards? What can we generate it? I think what usually happened in a kind of career is that you widen your scope and also understand then the other side, the one who sells your idea and your partners internally and externally. So this constant scope extension, I think that is quite important to have that development, personal development. And I think that happened, was a natural thing that happened with me as well.
So basically, you widened your view then on the organization itself. So, and yeah, seeing also some points, how maybe also departments, between departments could collaborate, or how it can be solved, et cetera, et cetera. So more in that way, no?
Exactly.
Okay. And what were the particular mistakes that you made at the beginning as a leader? So, and what helped you to become better? Are there maybe also some kind of stories that you would like to share, also some examples, let's say, to make it more tangible?
Yeah, once again, that is the reason why I mentioned that at the beginning, to be too focused on your R&D idea, that you might be technical perfect, but on the other side, too expensive, maybe too complex to realize, and even too complex to realize in manufacturing. That was definitely, when you are eager to realize that, you are pushing that. And sometimes it's better to also understand the other side. And yeah, here at the beginning, there are for sure some examples where I might be too pushy for realizing something. And finally, the needed profit or the user experience was not realized. No? Not hopefully too many of them, but some might be the case. But that is also then directly linked to how can that be improved. And many organizations are working with their staff on that, particularly when they develop people. And that is always to enable a kind of rotation system, that you do not stick too long on your current position, that you rotate, that you take on maybe a position from your current partner, that you have a constant scope enhancement, and that you understand and develop the whole picture of an enterprise, how they are working, understand the influences and basically the impact of a kind of decision. This constant personal development by widening scope and by changing roles, I think that was kind of the win factor to enable then also learning.
Those are a lot of years of experience of technical side, but also leadership side. And it's really amazing to see all this kind of life wisdom that you extract from all those years. It's really inspiring that you took the time to share again with us, let's say, talking about the technical development, talking about the Polestar portfolio, talking about the challenges very transparently, talking about collaborations, innovations, all these kind of approaches that you do at Polestar, and always keeping in mind, okay, what is really important for Polestar? Sustainability, design, performance. I have so much sympathy for this brand. I make it really open, super public. So lots of success on your way. So lots of success for all the especially sustainable goals that you have. Exactly, the Polestar Zero project. I wish you so much luck and success with that. So may it really go well and even better than you maybe imagined.
Ludmila, thanks a lot for the invitation. It's always a pleasure. I followed now a couple of your podcasts and it's always exciting to listen to that. Thanks a lot for the invitation. It was really nice again. And let's see, maybe we find another one in Polestar who will report about it. We have many things to tell and we have still a long roadmap in front of us.
There are many ways to achieve a more sustainable future. There are many companies and innovative leaders who choose and actively go very different ways. Let's just not forget one thing. No matter how different the ways are, the big goal is one and the same. See you very soon in the next episode.